Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how you doing, sir?
I'm good. I'm not yelling in the mic today. No worries.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, we have company.
We have a shorter and quieter intro from Steve today. We do indeed have a guest, friend of the program, returning again, new title, new head coach of the Chicago Sky, Tyler Marsh. Tyler, welcome back. How you doing, sir?
Thanks a lot. I'm doing well. Things are slowing down a little bit on my end after a crazy few weeks, but I'm excited. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me back.
There we go. I have so many questions for you. First and foremost, happy for you, excited for you, proud of you. Before getting to like the more specific questions, just how cool has this experience been for you? Have you had time to actually like soak all of this in?
I think now maybe a little bit, but it's still a ton of emotions that continue to go on. I think some of that's probably because I'm still living in Vegas for the time being. But it's been difficult to phase out of and transition away from the Aces and just because of the relationships that were built and everything. But it's also mixed with excitement of what this new adventure and this new opportunity is and will bring. And I think one of the coolest parts of this all has been the amount of support that I've gotten from people with the Aces, people with within Chicago, whether that's fans or people within the organization, and then past coaches that I've worked for, obviously family, friends, and mentors. So, the outpouring of support that I've got has been for sure the coolest part of everything.
That's dope, man. Like, I think that's been, well, that was some of the fun when seeing the official announcement, just seeing the outpouring from literally everywhere.
Yeah.
Plus Sid Colson's Twitter, but from literally everywhere. Yeah.
You gotta love Sid where she's at. So she's yeah. So it may look as a little hostile on Twitter, but it's all love. It's all in good fun.
Oh yeah, that's just Sid. I had to throw the joke in there. Who's the most surprising person that you've heard from?
Honestly, I would say the other coaches around the league. Sandy Brondello is one of the first coaches that reached out to me, Kurt Miller. And those people obviously that I knew of and have met obviously during the 3 years in the W, but didn't really have extensive relationships with. So, but to get the support of your peers around the league, that's been really cool. People have done it at a high level for a long time. And so, I certainly appreciated that. And we had league meetings in New York a couple weeks ago and seeing other general managers and other coaches around the league show that support and appreciation as well. That's meant a lot to me for sure.
Got you. You mentioned that you're still in Vegas right now. Imagine you're going to make the move to Chicago as soon as you can. How many food wrecks have you gotten so far?
A ton. I couldn't even give you all the names of them, but I'm excited to, I've never had deep dish pizza, so I'm excited for that experience. I was on a podcast a couple of days ago with Christina, and she was telling me a few brunch places to go to out there as well. So I'm a food guy, so I'm excited.
In the food capital, you're gonna have some fun. As far as taking the job itself, like how quickly, or just how did the interview process come together? Like how did those conversations start with Chicago?
Yeah, it was the initial conversation didn't really happen, immediately after the season ended. It kind of was a few weeks to longer afterwards. But once the conversation did happen, my first conversation was with Jeff, our general manager. And it wasn't long after that, probably towards the end of having to talk to him at all, had a conversation with him for about 45 minutes. And at the end of the conversation, he was like, I got to get you out here. I got to get you out for an interview. And I had interviewed with another team a couple of weeks prior. And, but for me in the process in general, it was something that I just wanted to come to me. If it happened, it happened. If it didn't, it did. I wasn't going to actively pursue. Because I felt in such a good place with the Aces and with my role and responsibility here. And so, and I knew that, for me to take that jump, it had to be the right opportunity. So at the same time, I felt like, the work that I put in throughout my career, and then I just owed it to myself to see what the process was. I'd never been on head coaching interviews before, so I didn't know really what to expect or what it entailed. And so I wanted to go through that process for me anyway, to where if that opportunity came down the line, then I would be prepared and I would be as ready as possible. And so I went on the interview and felt a connection immediately with Jeff and kind of the vision that and what he saw for the Sky organization moving forward. And I was incredibly transparent with the Sky front office and ownership in terms of what I felt like I would need to be successful and what that commitment would entail. And so again, because I was in such a good place here in Vegas, and so I didn't feel in a rush to anything. So I was open with both sides, and you know, and it worked out. I felt that this is where I was, the organization I was felt called to go to. And you know, so it just kind of, once the interview process happened, everything else kind of moved pretty swiftly after that.
Okay. Like, I guess as you were kind of taking in, like, you know, the comfort and the happiness you had with the Aces organization, plus this opportunity, like, how big was the camp for you in terms of just bouncing ideas off of, like, gathering advice, gathering intel? How many people did you talk to? Or was this something that you just wanted to kind of take in for yourself and kind of process it?
A little bit of both. I kept it kind of into a tight circle. You know, obviously my family and then a couple of mentors in the coaching world that I trust in. And then for sure with Becky and our administration here with the Aces. I just I didn't want anything to be not left on the table. I wanted to be open through it, but I also wanted to be my decision, and I wanted it to be something that felt right for me and for my family. And so that's kind of the circle that I kept it to.
I do have a question, because, and obviously everything is well deserved because you have put in the work at every single stop that you've been at for years and years and years. So it's always a salute for me. In the scenario you were with the Aces, did that kind of comfort give you like a power of sorts where you were just like, you know what? I know what I have. I know what I want. Did that help you kind of go into the process just a different mindset?
For sure. Because I think if anything, it helped me know what to ask for, what to expect. It helped me to lay out my expectations, and that, and anything that fell short of that, to me, you know, gave me what I needed to know. And so, again, I think that from a, not just from a comfortability standpoint, but just from a feel factor, is just it was something that I knew I had the Aces there behind me no matter what, and that certainly made it easier as well, made the whole process easier for me to not feel like there's a little bit of it that makes you feel like you're letting, you know, people down from where you're leaving from, just because of what we had built and what we had established. And so you know, I just wanted to be as open as possible throughout that. And the support that the Aces gave me through it all certainly helped that transition and me go through that process.
Gotcha. You touched on it. My next question was going to be, obviously the Aces love you, would have wanted you to stay. Like, as things were getting closer with Chicago, was there a, we can give you a little bit more of this, or any kind of push and pull there to try to keep you?
Yeah, there's negotiations. I think that, you know, ultimately, I think that the opportunity to be a head coach in conjunction with everything that was kind of on the table from both sides just made it make sense. And I think that both sides understood that. And so, yeah, it was it wasn't an easy decision by any means. But again, I'm a faith-driven person. I'm a purpose-driven person. And so I tried to lean on that and go with my heart. And again, this is where I felt like it was time to go and the place to go. You know, those relationships that were established here in Vegas is something that'll always last for me. I wouldn't be in this position without them. It was a kind of a similar feeling that I got when I left Indiana and the NBA to come here to Vegas. Is just, it's one of those things where you know, you're happy where you're at, but at the same time, you're feeling propelled and called to be in another place. That's kind of how it went. And, you know, I wanted to make sure I had individual conversations with, everyone from players to staff, within the whole organization, really, And so just to let them know how much they mean to me and those relationships mean to me. And I hope that they're, you know, continue to last moving forward.
Got you. Last one for me on this, and we can move into Sky specific stuff. What was the conversation with Jackie Young like in particular, as you two have naturally just been kind of joined at the hip in terms of the development and relationship y'all been able to build together?
Yeah. She was my very first workout when I got to Vegas, and my very last workout prior to leaving Vegas. And, you know, at the time when we did our last workout, it was probably maybe 2 days before I knew that a prior decision was going to be made. And so I remember I came onto the court, she walked onto the court, we started form shooting, and I was just like, yeah, I can't do this right now. I had to run off the court real quick, get myself together, came back and finished the workout. But it was a difficult conversation to have. Obviously, the everyone knows the kind of the relationship that Jack and I had from a working standpoint. And it was tough. It was tough with all of it. It was tough with Asia. It was tough with Sydney. Like all the relationships that I was able to kind of cultivate here. There was a tough conversations to have, and not to mention with this coaching staff. I mean, Becky, I would do anything for Becky. So just having that conversation throughout was tough as well. And so all of them played in a huge part into who I am as a coach and how I've gotten here. I think that when you look at specifically, you know, me and Jack's relationship from a player development standpoint, you know, the messaging with me and her was like, look, you were great way before me. You were a 3-on-3 Olympic champion. You were a college champion, a high school all-time leading scorer. Like, you were great before me. You'll be great beyond me. Like, it's just, I was just glad to be part of her story and the Aces story. You know, and now it's just time for a new chapter, and hopefully that I can, you know, have that same impact in Chicago.
So transitioning into Chicago, coming off nearly a playoff season, but a little bit of faltering towards the end there. What excites you the most about the Chicago roster, or just the opportunity itself?
I think the potential. It's a lot of talent in their youth, and you know, I think that there's some things that that hopefully we can introduce that can kind of help expand their games and take it to another level, and also surround the team and add some pieces in some areas where they may have been lacking, you know, in the past. And so, but I'm excited about the potential, about the growth and being a part of that. And so I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Oh, well, I'll ask this question, and it's kind of a little bit more broad. I know Nikai's want to lock on the Sky, my bad.
You good.
Because we talked about it last time you were on the pod, just kind of like the shift in like basketball philosophies as you've gone through time.
Yep.
How do you now balance that with just working to also stay ahead of the curve when it comes to trends?
Yeah.
And kind of evolving that when you make the shift?
Yeah, I think you have to see and analyze what that curve is, and then how your roster is fit for that, and kind of, you know, adjust accordingly. So, and I think that you know, I think that when you look at a team like, I don't know, if you look at the Cleveland Cavaliers and how they're adjusting and how they're playing right now, they're kind of doing that. And so I think for us, it's about creating more space. I think that that's the kind of the true essence of what we want to emphasize, is how to get to space, how to score in space, how to create space. And so that'll be a huge emphasis early on moving forward for me from an offensive standpoint anyway.
Got you. I guess related to that, and it's interesting that you mentioned Cleveland as an analog, because you look at Cleveland, what they do with their two bigs, and Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, use them as hubs, can move them around the board. You're entering a Chicago situation with Camilla Cardoso, with Angel Reese. I guess just how much do you feel like that portion can be replicated with those two? Or what kind of potential do you see with those twos being used as hubs?
Yeah, I think that, you know, until each one of them get to a point where they can stretch the floor consistently, I think that, again, it's about how they're able to play together in terms of creating space for one another. When one's in the action, where's the other one go? You know, how to get them be more facilitators within action as well, because I do think that's an underrated skill of both of their games. And so we want to play through them. We want them to be hubs for us offensively, to where we can create action and movement around them as well. And so that'll be a focal point, and just, you know, again, maintaining, creating and maintaining that space.
This sparked the thought in my mind. As a coach, how much fun is it when you kind of see something from afar and you have an idea in your head, or you're coaching against someone and you see it up close and it's like, wait a minute, we could do this, this, and this. Yeah. And now the coach brain starts activating that. Like, how much fun is that part of the program?
Yes. It's funny because me and Becky used to talk about this all the time. We're like, coaches steal from everybody. Like, that's kind of the name of the game. And so I think that even when you look at, you know, I don't want to toot our own horn, but when you look at how we were playing our first year in Vegas, and you look at where the game is now, I think that a lot of teams are playing a style that was very similar to how we were playing in 2022 in terms of the high pace, up tempo, a ton of spacing, ton of threes. Like, most of the league is playing that way. And so I think that, you know, you mentioned earlier, you adapt and you adjust, and you see that just how, when you create space, it allows for our players in our league to really showcase their talents. And we have a talented league to where the only thing that can really derive that is a lack of spacing. And so, you watch and you take notes of what other teams do well. And, you know, kind of maybe an area that we don't do so well, and how we can kind of adapt to that. And so we do that all the time, and I'm sure the other 12 staffs will as well.
I think bouncing off of that, and I hope this isn't a bad question, like, to the general adapting portion of the program and trying mm-hmm. to match where the league is. Like, it does feel like there is still value in having a thing that other teams can't do. Like, Chicago does just have this amount of size in the front court, and they were pretty much wire to wire one of, if not the best, offensive rebounding team in the league. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you kind of balance establishing better spacing and opening things up, but still maintaining, like, that kind of possession edge that you can get with the offensive rebounding?
Yeah, I think it's finding ways to, you definitely don't want to take away the some of the strengths of what they do well. And so that being said, we don't want our good offensive rebounds to just be camped out in the lane the whole time and then be at a disadvantage to get back in transition defense either. And so I think that, you know, finding areas where it's where I kind of call them smart crashes, where we can attack the offensive glass in a way that doesn't take us out of position, you know, to get back on defense, it will be crucial. But, you know, I think our first mindset is we want to score early, so either we don't have to worry about offensive rebounding, but when those opportunities do come and it gives us a chance for a second chance opportunities, we still want to take advantage of that.
Yeah. I just want to thank you for saying that, because Nikias always brings up the rebounding advantage. I'm like, well, the goal is probably not to be there, because you would like to probably score the basketball. So thank you personally from the bottom of my heart. I just want you to know that. Continue, Nikias.
Okay, well, fair enough. I guess broadening the scope, as you are taking the Chicago job in an interesting time in the league, as we are now heading into expansion, and, you know, obviously every free agency period kind of lends itself to a level of flux with your roster. New CBA coming up, so I would imagine a lot of teams going to take one-year deal, players going to take one-year deals, et cetera. So I think in terms of establishing your system or just trying to establish your ideals, is it more difficult to try to go about that while knowing, you know, expansion draft, I don't know which six players, I'm sure you literally do, but in general, like, don't know which six players are going to be protected, don't know what the free agency period is going to look like, et cetera. Like, how does that affect your process in trying to build things out?
I don't think it does too much. I think that because for me, it's about 2025. Everything in 2026 and beyond, because we're going to have to go through this again when two new teams come in. And so I think all we can worry about is this upcoming year and kind of, you know, mold around the pieces that we know is going to be returning. And I think we had a good understanding of that. And so and now it's about finding those pieces, whether it's in free agency or whether it's in the draft, of kind of who fits, you know, that mold and who fits the who allows the strengths of those who are already here to kind of be the best, you know, version of themselves. And so for me, I don't think it has too much impact for this upcoming year beyond maybe, but I think our focus is on, you know, being in the best position to be successful this coming season.
just kind of building off that, how important is it for you as a coach to kind of establish that identity with your team, where every night we're going to do this, this, and that, and to see that kind of grow and build?
It's big, but I also think there's a level of accountability on the players too, to kind of embrace that as well. And almost take on an identity of themselves too. I think that who I may have an idea of what I want us to be may not actually be the final product, you know, at the, towards the end of the season. And so I think that, that I have to adapt and our staff has to adapt as well. But I think most importantly, you want to have the, you want to lay the foundation of what our core values are. And then the identity of the team will kind of, to me, kind of mold itself as it, as the season goes, and you start to see what you're good at and what you're, you know, what you're not good at. And so I think most important, we want to be, I say it all the time, we want to be committed and we want to compete. We want to be good teammates. We want to be coachable. But we want to be hard to go against. We want to know that every arena that we go into, whether that's home or on the road, that the other team is going to get our best shot. And, you know, I think that you saw glimpses of that last year. They played hard. And so anytime that you can get a young team to play with that much effort on a nightly basis, I think you're in a good position moving forward. And so we want to continue to build upon that.
Okay. I think similar to that, if I can ask a scheme question real quick, because that Steve alluded to, like, you have worked pretty much everywhere. We talked about your extensive coaching history, some of the coaches that you've been under, and obviously you have your own philosophies on top of that.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about evolving offensively, better spacing, use the bigs as hubs, et cetera. On the defensive end, how excited are you to work with the Chicago group? And in general, like, what is the influence you would say these other coaches have had on you defensively in terms of the multiple things that they'll toss out there?
Yeah, I think the first thing that jumps out, I think, is we want to be a force protecting the paint. I mean, that's where our strength is right now. It's we have a great shot blocker in Camilla, and we have a great rebounder in Angel. And so I think that it's about containing penetration on the perimeter and then being in good position to so that our bigs aren't taking themselves out of position, whether it's to contest shots or whether it's to be there on the glass. And so we want to be aggressive. I think that another area defensively that Chicago was good at last year was creating turnovers. And so we want to be aggressive, but we want to be smart. We want to be disciplined. And so finding that balance is going to be a task, but that's kind of the area that we want to be in. We don't want to put too much pressure on Camilla, but we want to be confident in our ability to pressure the ball on the perimeter, knowing what we have protecting the paint behind us. And that's not to mention Elizabeth Williams as well, who's a really good rim protector in herself. And so I'm excited for that.
Okay. I think related to that, as you have spent some time under Carlisle, under Nick Nurse, naturally under Becky, like, these are three coaches that do not mind not just throwing out zone, but throwing out different types of zone. Yeah. Yeah. Is it fair to expect that we'll see some fun zone in Chicago?
For sure. 100%. For sure. I think that, and you kind of alluded to it, I think with those three coaches, particularly Coach Nurse and Becky, is they are not afraid to think outside the box and to do something new. And I think that, you know, Coach Carlisle kind of set that trend as well in the NBA in some respects. But in terms of the coaches that I've been around, there is no fear in Nick and in Becky's range of things that they'll throw out there. So yes, you can for sure see some zone at some point.
Can I bounce off that with an additional question? And just because I think a lot of times people don't understand that with no fear comes a lot of thought.
Sure.
And you also have to try things out and flush it quickly at times.
Yeah.
How do you kind of balance, well, all right, hey, I think this might work.
Yep.
And then realizing, hey, maybe not today.
Yep.
Like, how do you balance that? Because it's something you need in your back pocket. Something can be effective, but sometimes might get hit. How do you kind of handle that?
Yeah, a couple of things with that. I think one, you have to be secure in what you already do well, and to be able to go to that. If you're not fundamentally sound and rooted into kind of your core and what you stand on, then it's hard to then throw out a bunch of different alternatives to it. And so I think that your team has to feel confident in what they do well, but then also knowing that, hey, we got this in our back pocket just in case, you know, just in case we need something on the side. And then I think the other part to it is, you know, sometimes you just don't have a team that's equipped for all that. I think that when you look at the teams that we had in Toronto, we had a Kyle Lowry, a Danny Green, a Serge Ibaka, a Marc Gasol. You had veteran players who were able to adapt pretty quickly on the fly, you know, when those things were thrown out of there. Obviously our teams these 3 years with Vegas have been veteran teams for the most part and experienced teams. And so it could be a little bit of a task with a young team to kind of, you know, throw out as much stuff as I would want to, but at the same time, you know, I think that once we get a good base on kind of what our foundation is, then it gives us more confidence moving forward into kind of throwing some loopholes out there every now and then.
Yeah. Actually, just on a more general note, I should have asked this earlier, I guess heading into year one with Chicago, do you have like a ready-made, we want to win 24 games and make the playoffs? Or is it just, we just want to build on what we have and then kind of evaluate from there?
I think that's more the mindset we want to, and it's not even building on what we have. It's more so like establishing what we have. For me, it's a new coach, new team, it's a new vibe. So we want to start from ground zero and then kind of work our way up and see where we're at. But I think that, I think my priority is establishing a mindset, a winning mindset, a championship mindset, and then moving forward from there. Cause I think that, you know, once you've done that, the basketball stuff will kind of come as it goes. But I think that our thought process and our mindset has to be that of, we want to work for everything that we get.
I think narrowing back down to the star young bigs, and Angel and Camilla, just what were some of your early impressions? Like how early were you scouting them in college before coming in? Or was it just, they got Chicago, let's see what we got since they're on the schedule against the Aces. Like what were some of the early impressions? And I guess from there, like what kind of evolution of their roles would you like to see?
Yeah, I was a fan of both in college. I think that, you know, everybody has dug up my tweets on Angel over the last 2 years at LSU. And so so I think that, I've been a fan of both. And I, you know, for me, I try to see the positive side and into players' games, especially young players, and the upside of what could be there. And so I think too often, especially in this league, too often, you know, because they're expected to contribute at a high level so early, you kind of overlook the room that you have to give them to grow. And so, you know, for me, I'll start with Camilla. I think that, you know, the physical tools that are there are just they jump off the screen at you. The way that she's able to run the floor at her size, and the way that she can contest and block shots and things of that nature. I think that you see a star in the making for her, and we want to utilize that and we want to encourage that, empower that. And I think that when you look at Angel, I think that there's things that she does well that you just can't teach. In terms of her knack of searching the offensive rebounds and her ability to run the floor as well. Like that's two people who are with that size and that mobile and agile, I think give you an upper hand on both ends of the floor. And not just that, but they want to play both ends of the floor. And so that's certainly a building block for me and something that jumped off the screen for both of them. I think that, you know, Angel figuring out how to go from in college to where she's dominating on a nightly basis to picking her spots here in the W and but able to do it in a way where she was breaking records and helping her team win games and doing things of that nature and building that confidence. That's something that we want to continue to build and lean on for sure.
There we go. And I think just bouncing off of that, watching both of them defensively was a lot of fun for me last year. Like watching Angel switching out and sitting down against guards was like, okay, this is more proficiency than I thought. And with Camilla, like you mentioned how much of a force she is at the rim, but like the random possessions that we got last year, particularly in those Fever games where Camilla's just up at the level. It's sure. Like, wait a minute. If she's able to nail this portion with any level of consistency, like,
yeah, And you kind of mentioned it earlier in terms of the shift in where the game is going. I think that, you know, part of that is from a defensive standpoint is versatility. You go back to the finals and it was a ton of switching between New York and Minnesota the entire series and really throughout the playoffs. And you're getting JJ switching out onto guards and things of that nature. And obviously the defensive versatility that Minnesota brought. So I think that that's an area that we'll explore as well too. We won't be afraid to see Camilla out there guarding on the wing at times and whatnot. Like we want to be versatile on both ends of the floor. So, and I think we have the personnel to do it.
Yeah. I think with Angel circling back, like, have you already had conversations about what you want the offseason to look like for her? Already slated to be an unrivaled? Like, are you going to be out there with that? Or just what have those conversations been like so far?
Yeah. We had a conversation. We text back and forth and we had a conversation pretty much immediately after the announcement got dropped. And basically it was me communicating kind of what my vision was for the team moving forward and introducing myself, but also kind of explaining what I wanted to introduce to the Sky and what I wanted this to be about. And then her communication to me was that, you know, she wanted to win. She's been a winner her whole life. And whatever it takes to get back to that point, she was open and willing to do. And so, you know, that's kind of how our conversations have been thus far. It's still early in the off season and she's been training daily. And obviously I'll be out there in Unrivaled seeing her as well. And so, but yeah, I'm excited. I think she's excited and, I think that she's anxious to showcase, you know, the things that she's worked on and improved over this off season.
I think related to that, I guess a more general player development note, what goes into kind of establishing these plans? Because I would bet, like, obviously you have a vision for what you think Angel can be, especially within the context of what Chicago can be. And I'm sure Angel has a vision for herself for what she wants to be, how she wants to work. Like, how do you find that, I guess, that kind of blend of visions?
That's been my life the last 10 years. Like, from a player development standpoint, to me, that's the essence of player development, is bridging the gap of where a player thinks they're at and what they want to be and how to bridge that gap into what they need to be for the team or what coach needs them to be. And so you never want to put restraints on them in terms of, where they see their game elevating and going to. And so I think that finding that balance is more fun to me than anything. And so, but I think there's things that she does well and that we want to continue to highlight, but also continue to work on in areas that we can continue to improve to help her be more successful and more efficient as well.
Just to bounce off that, you mentioned the balance and not wanting to put restraint. I feel like, how do you navigate giving the freedom, because those reps are important, mm-hmm. but also the fact that, hey, we emphasize what you do well. We add this to it. Now what you do well, it gets even better. So how mm-hmm. important is it to get that buy-in while also maintaining the freedom of movement, the freedom of understanding who they are?
Yeah, I think that to get the buy-in, players have to understand and see why it would help. They have to know the why behind it. And so I think that whether that's through film, whether that's through what have you, it's important that we as a staff lay out a kind of an outline of, like, look, this is what you do well. This is why I think doing more of this and less of this helps you become better in XYZ area. And so I think that, those are things that we want to instill and emphasize early on, and then have that translate over from workouts, and then have that translate over into training camp and into practices, and then ultimately into games. But it's something that, there's a responsibility on all of our ends, from us as a staff to Angel as a player and so forth. So, but that's certainly an emphasis, a high emphasis of focus for us.
I think shifting to Camilla very quickly is she has been just looking at some of the numbers. She's been balling out overseas. She's been there. Like, how much of that action have you been able to catch? And with her being overseas, like, what has the communication been like between you two?
Yeah. So she's in China. So she's 13, 15 hours ahead of me. We text pretty often. I just kind of let her know that I've, you know, I'm watching the games and, you know, to keep doing what she's doing. But, I went, you know, as much as possible, I just want her to feel free out there. I want her to play free. I want her to be dominant. I want her to gain as much confidence as she can while out there. And because she's going to be someone that we lean heavily on, obviously, and play through once she gets back over to the States. And so, you know, I think that playing overseas is great for young players to continue to gain confidence. And even though it's a different game, there's still aspects of that we want to translate back over once she's with us here in Chicago. And so I love seeing the way that she's establishing post presence down there. And that's something that we want to emphasize here too. And so, she's been great. And I know she'll continue to be great out there.
Camilla's just, she's just a fun player, period. And like watching her the second half of the year get more comfortable with those post touches. And it wasn't just the size advantage, it's just better seals in the half court on top of it. Because obviously do it in transition and just outrun folks, bury them underneath the basket. But seeing the comfort as a creator was really encouraging to see.
Yeah, that's going to be a huge point of emphasis for us. I think that, and I think too that, you know, if we can surround her and Angel with more shooting, because I think they're both willing passers. And so now it's less help that they're seeing at the rim. And so hopefully that turns into more, you know, higher efficiency in the paint. And then when the help does come and collapse, then, you know, we expect them to be able to make those reads and those kickouts to our shooters. So I'm looking forward to that.
Got you. I think transitioning, if we can do a little bit of rewind with this Aces season.
Yep.
How did you take in that year? Have you had time to process what that season was and the pressures of trying to three-peat and everything that came along with that?
Yeah, I think initially, you know, I remember going into the office a day or two after we got eliminated from the playoffs, and myself and Natalie Nakase and Charlene and pretty much our whole staff, we were just sitting around and we were like, oh, this sucks. Like we've been spoiled, bro. We've been spoiled. Like this is awful. And you forget what that feels like. And so I think once that kind of surpasses though, then you start to appreciate what you did accomplish in those 3 years. And I think that's probably been the biggest takeaway, honestly, is to have a tattoo on my wrist that says celebrate the wins. And I think that when you've gotten so accustomed to winning, you almost learn to stop celebrating because you just expect them almost. And I think that if there's one thing to take away in terms of a championship mindset, is that you can never just expect to win. You have to go get the win. You have to go earn the win. You have to go. And so I think that, you know, once the immediate feeling of disappointment passed, it was more so an appreciation and a gratitude of everything that that this organization, that the Aces organization, was able to accomplish over the last 3 years and winning back-to-back championships. And even this past year was for most organizations, that was a successful year. I mean, you get to the playoffs, you battle through adversity. It was an Olympic year, you battled through some injuries, and to still, you know, go on a little run. We ended the season on a 9-1 streak. And so I think that, you know, we had good momentum going into the playoffs, but ultimately I think, you know, New York was the most consistent team throughout the entire year. And you know, when you can look at the season that they had and Minnesota had, that those two teams deserve to, you know, to play in the championship. I think that another aspect to that is you felt bad for Asia with the season that she had individually. You hoped that it could have ended on a better note from a team standpoint. Just with the historic numbers that she was putting up. And then we got amazing contributions from Tiffany Hayes to win Sixth Woman of the Year. And so, you know, you hate to see that those individual performances get put out early from the playoffs. But again, it's still a testament to what they were able to do and what this team was able to do.
I think related to that, like, How difficult is it to kind of balance, you know, establishing a standard of excellence while also, to your point, like celebrating the wins? Because naturally, you've won your championships. You want to continue to win those. That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, I think it's I think it can be difficult at times. I think for us, we were we had great leadership, great veteran leadership as well. So it kind of when the boat started to rock, which every team has the boat start to rock throughout the ebb and flows of a season, I think that you lean on that veteran leadership, you lean on your staff to kind of right the ship. And so I think that we were able to do that, and we and our vets were great in the locker room. And so I think the important thing is just to continue to understand that, you know, what got you there, and stay in tune to, you know, to the fundamentals and the foundation of what got you to that point, and to continue to build upon that no matter what the team looks like. And so I'm proud of everything that we went through over the 3 years, and even for this past year, though it didn't end like we wanted to, there's a lot of things that we should take away, a lot of positive things that we should take away and be proud of.
Okay. And I think last thing I have on this Aces season, or I guess just a general two-parter on the Aces. What was your favorite moment from this past season? And in general, what was your favorite moment from your Aces tenure?
Man, I think from the tenure, it would be the back-to-back championships. Obviously, I think that just the feeling that came from that, like the feeling of accomplishment, especially I think maybe the second one a little more so than the first one, and just because it was almost like, at least in our locker room, we felt like we went from the most beloved in the first year to the most hated in the second year. And so kind of, you know, going through that was a wild ride, but it was we earned that one. And I think that that one felt a little bit more. But if you took kind of a consensus, I think that one felt, you know, the most gratifying. I think from a individual standpoint, man, it was so many good ones. I think that maybe one of my favorites that was probably before the season, which was when Sydney and Teresa Plaisance, when their first episode of their show came out, and we kind of got together as a team and watched the first episode together, and then to see that support, and then Sydney kind of spoke afterwards of how none of this off the court things would be possible if it wasn't for the success that we had on the court, and how instrumental everyone part of the organization had been in her success off the court and whatnot. And so I think just that certainly meant a lot to everyone, and that was cool to see, and just how appreciative she was of her teammates and the staff and whatnot. So I would say that was a big moment. I think that, Asia accepting her MVP and thanking each one of her teammates individually was a huge moment. And then the moment that the four USA Team USA Olympians, you know, got announced and got awarded there, that they would be a part of the Olympic team with Jackie Plum, Chelsea, and Asia. That was a really cool moment as well.
I have a question. I have two, but I'm going to start with one. And this is going to this is a salute to Rich. How wild was it that for you and Nat to both get hired and go through this process at the same time, almost? Like,
I think the it was pretty surreal. First of all, congrats to her. Like, she's as deserving as anyone. And we've had similar roles from our G League and NBA experience to now being here in the W. So I'm super proud of her, and she's going to be great. I think that it's definitely surreal, especially that it happened in the first year. We might have got cussed out a time or two by Becky for leaving her. But it was all fun. She's super proud of us. We all went to dinner a couple weeks ago, so it was great. No, it was it's been great. Again, it's been, I think we're both. If you asked her, she would have the same sentiments in terms of just how impactful the Aces organization has been and to what our growth has been as coaches. And so we appreciated our time in Vegas, and we're looking forward to having that next step respectively. I think it's funny too, because we still talk pretty regularly now. I saw her over the weekend in LA going to some college games. And it's funny because, like, as close as we are, it's also like now we're kind of, we're the ops now. So it's like, we don't want to give too much. So we talk, but don't want to give too much to each other. So, but no, I think we're equally as proud for each other to be in this step.
That's awesome. And I love that happened for both of y'all. I'm going to ask this question and the guys going to get mad. How good did it feel to be a winner in Las Vegas?
Man, it's, you know, for me, it's been special because, when you go back to 2019 and I was able to witness and be part of the first championship in Toronto's history and seeing just the passion and the appreciation that that city and that country had, for us and for the Raptors winning that championship went beyond basketball. And I think that when you fast forward here to another degree, like bringing the championships here to Vegas, from the people who are from Vegas and have supported the Aces and just seeing the passion that they have now, not just for the Aces, but for women's basketball. And it's you get a sense that I think when you look 5-10 years from now, like you can look at the 2022 and 2023 Aces as a team that changed the game in a lot of respects and changed the league in a lot of respects. And I think that's something for us to appreciate and be proud of. And continue to build upon moving forward. I think the league is in a great place and continue to move in a great place. I think there's a ton of gratitude to have within that.
I got a couple of quick hitters before we end with some fun. One, as you know, we're on the Vegas topic. Are you going to miss Lolo's?
I'm sorry?
So are you going to miss Lolo's?
Oh, Lolo's. my first time going was with you, actually. So I guess the question is, I guess you won't miss Lolo's. You'll still be around in Vegas. But it's Lolo's was great. Lolo's was great. I'll say that. And I'll make it a point to go, when we come back to Vegas. But don't put that on me like I'm the Lolo's connoisseur. That's you.
Nah. I wanted to be silly for a bit. On a more serious note. As you are, like, more so you let the work do the talking. It feels like your style.
Yeah.
You are going to be in front of microphones a lot this season as the head coach. Are you ready to kind of ramp up the volume figuratively and literally this year?
Yeah, I think that, obviously my natural personality is kind of being even keel. I don't really get too high and too low, but I know that that's, something that I got to do in this new role. And that's there. That's there. I think that, for me too, as an assistant, you pick and choose your spots on how to communicate, when to communicate, and things like that. And so I think that, more often than not, I found my presence on staffs kind of being that kind of even keel voice, that kind of asserts themselves when needed and being able to establish those relationships with players so I can kind of meet them where they're at in terms of my communication style with them. And so some you can be with Plum, you can be a little more direct than you can be with others and expect to have more direct conversation back at you. I think that, I don't want to lose the aspect of being myself and being true to myself. And so I think it's important to pick and choose my spots on when to turn it up and when not to, but also have a staff that supports that as well and kind of make up in the areas that I may lack or don't have. And so that's kind of where the process is now in terms of, just getting my staff together. But I'm excited for that as well, because that's probably, if not just as important or more important as the roster that you put around, is having a staff that can support myself, but then can also support the players as well.
Got you. And then just to close things out with a little fun, this has been a bit of a whirlwind for you. But last time we had you on the pod, we did talk some wrestling, as you are a pretty big wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. How much have you been able to keep up in light of everything happening right now?
Yeah, the last month has been a little bit rocky. I think that, normally during the season, I keep up enough during the season to be up to date with the next pay-per-view so that I can watch that. I just kind of watch the pay-per-views during the season. And then the off season is where I kind of can tune back into a weekly episodic kind of timeline. But the last month has been so wild that I haven't been, I've just been relying on podcasts to keep me up to date with. So I got to lock back in as we approach the new year. And then obviously WrestleMania season in April, which is back in Vegas this year. So, but yeah, I'm pretty up to date for the most part.
Yeah, well, now I'm intrigued. What are the wrestling pods that you listen to?
I really just listen to the Wrestling Inc. podcast. That's my main one. They kind of fill in on after every single episode, whether that's NXT, whether that's Raw, SmackDown, AEW. So I rely on them. It's 3-4 podcasts a week. So I lock into them pretty regularly.
Okay. Well, I guess just quickly, do you have Roman / CM Punk / Paul Heyman thoughts?
No, other than I just want to see it. Like, I think it's great. I think they're too. I think there's so much. First, for the Roman and the Bloodline storyline to be as impactful for as long as it has been something we haven't seen in a long time. And so I think that continuing to see how that progress in a way that still feels new has been amazing. I'm excited to continue to see where that goes. Obviously, CM Punk is and has been a wild card his entire career, so you never know what you're going to get there. And then Paul Heyman adds another element, entertainment element to it and storytelling element to it on both sides, really. There's history with both sides with him. And so I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm excited to see it.
I maintain my favorite bit is that Roman Reigns has not changed a single bit. And he's just like, hey, finally, you guys are acknowledging me.
He's amazing, man. He is amazing. I'm not sure that I think that he gets some credit. Now he gets a lot of credit now, but I think that he's one of those that kind of like John Cena, like when it's over with and when his run as the main guy is over with, you're going to appreciate him a lot more for what he was able to do during his era, because he's someone that's right up there with the greatest of all time, in my opinion.
Actually, can I pose a wrestling question to the both of you? Like, how do you kind of take in this era of like wrestling coverage where we have these pods, you got people, like you have wrestling journalists at this point, like you're having to avoid spoilers and early leaks and stuff like that. Like, does that ruin the surprise at all for you to see it blow up the way that it has and be covered the way it is? Or just how do you kind of soak it in as a concept?
I like it personally. I like it because I think that it shows just how invested and interested people are in it. And there's a demand for it. And so I think that, especially for myself, as I've gotten older and deeper in my career, like I'm now reliant on it for a lot of the updates and whatnot. And so I appreciate it. It's something that I think about that I wonder what it would have been like in the Attitude Era or what have you, if you had podcasts and things like that around during that time, other than just kind of blogs and things like that. And not only that, but how wrestlers in that era would adapt to what the media life is like now. I think that you see a lot more candid and maybe unprofessional interviews back then compared to now. But no, I think it's great for the sport and for the entertainment aspect of it.
I think it enhances the storytelling aspect. I think you get more of a variety. You can have more outlets to understand or hear a different perspective and kind of just engage in it in a different way. Shout out to my guy, Cam Hawkins. But yes. Like in a different sense, like I remember growing up, it was kind of like it was hot. But also when it was not, you just kind of were like a wrestling fan. And yeah. So you didn't necessarily have a tribe. And if you had a tribe, they really liked specific things. If you didn't like those things, well, I guess I can't really talk about it with y'all. So there's a little bit more like a community aspect to it, to where, okay, I can understand maybe I didn't like this, but oh, I hadn't thought about this. Like the fact that like there are people that have like threads that break down every little thing about the Bloodline or something you miss when it comes to Rhea and Liv. And it's like, oh, that does make sense. It just kind of helps you immerse, like you're more immersed in it. And so it's like, now I'm looking for the little things. Like, does that mean something? That type of beat.
I think too, I think it's cool because you see more mainstream celebrities now, like support it and back it and not be afraid to hide that aspect of them. I remember I'm a huge 49ers fan. I guess it's okay to say that now that I'm not with the Aces, I guess. but no, I went to WrestleMania last year and George Kittle was sitting a couple rows in front of me. So that was cool to see. And, you know, Wale, you go take music and Wale is a huge wrestling fan. You got Joel Embiid dunking on people and doing the DX sign. So it's everywhere now from sports to entertainment. And it's cool to see that, to your point, Steve, that you're not looked at as the weirdo for liking wrestling still. So it's cool.
I think that immersion is super cool. And that's also what kind of sparked the question. Cause like, as I saw, you know, Paul Heyman makes his grand return, introduces CM Punk and all this good stuff. And the next day, and it's like a tweet of someone circling Paul Heyman wearing the red pockets wear.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, like on one hand, it's cool that people are digging into this. On the other hand, it's like, hey, have we gotten too dialed into some of this stuff to where we are now looking at literally everything? Yeah. Not that it's right or wrong, but like, that's where I'm just like, I wonder if there is an inflection point on this.
Now, Nikias, you screening angle man are mad at pocket square talk? I don't know. Come on, brother. This is your lane.
I'm not mad at all. But like, that's what I'm saying. Like, as a kid growing up as a wrestling fan, like I get to watch Raw, get to watch SmackDown. If there's a surprise appearance, I'm just catching that in real time. I get the pay-per-views if like my grandparents want to spend the money for the pay-per-view. And that was just kind of it. And so like comparing that to now, like, it's more accessible. Like, we have hyper analysis on it. Again, not good or bad. It's just different. And so that's where I'm like, ooh, like where is this ultimately going to end up? Like, I'm just intrigued by that part now.
Yep. I agree.
Nikias Duncan being mad at the Nikias Duncan of wrestling. I just want you to know that.
That is incredible. All right. Well, that's all I had. Steve, did you have any closing thoughts, questions for Tyler?
I have none. Thank you for coming on. Congrats again, as always. Wish you the best of luck. You're gonna crush it, and can't wait to kind of watch that develop and envelop. And you know, hopefully, you'll be the first third time guest on the pod. No,
I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys. I appreciate the work that you do, the coverage that you do. I tune in all the time, and it's the work that you guys do and the passion that you do it with. It's appreciated amongst myself as a basketball junkie, but certainly appreciate it. Keep doing what you guys are doing, and thanks for having me back.
Appreciate you, man. Congratulations again. And with that, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean,
wherever you've been gone.
That's what the RIP is for. But wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Nikias NBA. Apparently, you are not allowed to follow Steve. So, you know, just search through my following. You'll find them.
No.
There you go. It's fine. Actually, on that note, Tyler, are you also making the move to Blue Sky? Or how are you handling social media these days?
You know, it's funny. It's almost like I feel kind of like the backup quarterback in the NFL. It's like it's cool right now. I'm getting all the support and the love right now because I ain't coached a game yet. And so that first loss, I take is I'm gonna have to get off of Twitter, Facebook. I'm gonna get off of all that. So I'm not oblivious of that. So no, I'm obviously active and engaged on social media. But I think once the season starts, I'll take a break because it's going to take a bit.
Social media is a funny place during W season, as you are well aware. But you can follow me on the socials, etc. Come join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties if you haven't already. The link to the room is in the podcast description. It's free to create your profile. If you have lead
just
pass,
click
you
can watch.
You know what? Do what Steve says. We will catch y'all later. We'll catch y'all next week.
Hey, great show, Nikias. When do I get my invite to Lolo's?